It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn. In the barn. Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Bean.
All right, and a good Tuesday morning, y'all. Welcome once again into the barn, the Bet America Radio Network. Always so pleased that you would choose us as your podcasting horse racing option. Of course, the beauty of podcast is you can listen whenever you want. Some people listen in the morning, some people listen in the afternoon, some in the evening. Sometimes I'll go to bed and the number of downloads will be at one number and I'll wake up and there'll be 60 more of them, that happened in the middle of the night. So always pleased when you can join us. We got a busy show, so we're going to get right to it. We're going to be joined in just a second by Merv Huber Calvo, who's a member of the Bet America team here. We have a horse at Bet America that we own. Bet America Babe, and she's running today in the eighth race at Parks, and we'll talk with Merv here in just a minute a little bit about Bet America Babe, how she came to be, and a little bit about her chances coming up this evening. She's still a maiden, but she's been knocking on the door lately, so we'll learn about Bet America Babe. We're going to be playing another edition of the horse racing newlywed game. My good friend Jessica Paquette, former analyst at Suffolk, now works with Starlight Racing, and her partner Keith Henshaw are going to join us, and we're going to quiz them to see how much they know about each other's love of the sport of horse racing. It's kind of similar to the newlywed game, but with horse racing. I think they've been an item for like 5 years, so they should know each other pretty well at this point in terms of... But I think Jess introduced Keith to racing, if I'm not mistaken, but we'll find out more when we talk to them a little bit later on. And then Emily Gullickson is going to join us, and Emily is a outstanding handicapper, first of all, but she's working with a new project called Optics EQ. It's OptixEQ.com, and it's kind of half past performance, half stat sheet, half trip notes. You know, it's kind of a cool thing that they're doing, and they've had some success with their beta trials, and so they've just recently launched. And we're going to talk to Emily about trip handicapping in general, and about she's a multiple NHC qualifier. I know Charlie Davis, who was a third place finisher at the NHC this year, who we had on the Bet America Radio Network when I was down in Vegas. He was one of their beta users and used it during the tournament and obviously had some great successes. He took home a six-figure payday. So we'll talk with Emily not only about Optics EQ, but about trip handicapping in general and how she kind of does it. Because I think that trip handicapping might be something that isn't quite done by as many people. And my only guess as to why that is because I think people don't necessarily want to put in the time that it requires to do it and to do it well. So that's one of the things Optics is trying to help you with, is to for them to do a lot of the work. But I just feel like I don't hear about people poring over replays like handicappers of yesteryear might have. But we'll talk with Emily a little bit later about that. But I want to bring in the Marvelous one. I call him Marvelous because he's not marvelous. He's Marvelous. And let's talk a little bit about Bet America Babe. All right, so joining us on the phone is a member of the Bet America team. We talked with him about our tournaments, but we're going to talk to him today about Bet America Babe. He's Merv Huber Calvo. Merv, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Jason?
Good. So Bet America Babe is something I was told about when I first was interviewing with the company. Pete, our boss, was talking about it, and I didn't put two and two together when I saw the name originally that Bet America Babe is part of the Bet America team.
She is. The company horse, and she's been with us for a couple of years now.
So, how did the idea come about for an online wagering company to get a horse?
Well, we made this decision as a team back in 2014 that we were going to get a company horse and run her under our name, and we just went ahead and did it. We found her in the Barrett sales out in California. I think she didn't meet her RNA, but we bought her privately right afterwards. She had a little knee chip, so we got her sent to Kentucky, we got that taken care of, and then we started racing her as a 2-year-old. But part of the reason we got her is with our VIP program. We love to reward our VIPs with different and unexpected things. We like to be unpredictable at times, and we took a group of our VIPs out to Keeneland back in April of 2014, and as part of that trip, we gave each of our VIPs that was attending a 10% stake in Bet America Babe, and what they would get for that 10% stake is they would get to root for her winning and share in the purse money that she took down that year in 2014. So when we were out there, she was actually still out there from getting that knee chip taken care of. So before we went to Keeneland to watch the races that day, we took everybody out there to meet Bet America Babe. But at the time, they didn't know what was happening, so it was all a big surprise. So we got off the bus, and we introduced them to this horse, and we got to say, you know, this is your horse for this year. This is the Bet America Babe and the one you can root for all year.
So is it going to be like Karakoram, where there's 80 different horses named Bet America something, or is Bet America Babe kind of it for now?
Well, if her broodmare career takes off, I suppose that's a distinct possibility.
Well, so Bet America Babe, we're talking about her because she's in today's eighth race at Parks. It's a maiden $15,000 claimer. Now, Bet America Babe was pretty bad her first few starts, but she seems to kind of figured it out, you know, kind of mid last fall, and her last, you know, hit four out of, or five out of her last six races have hit the board and ran pretty well.
Yeah, she got off to a bit of a slow start, so we got her as a two-year-old. She did make it to the races as a two-year-old, but only once. She finished fifth in a $75,000 maiden claiming race at Belmont. Went on, you know, still had some lingering issues with that knee, went on the shelf for a little bit, but she really got seriously to the racetrack in July of last year. And again, it did. It took her a couple starts to get things figured out. But starting around September of last year, she started hitting the board at the, at the $10,000 level. And I think she's finished second or third in five of her last six starts. So she's been a reliable horse to use in your exotics, at least.
Yeah, I mean, she picked up $16,000 in earnings last year and really only raced for the last 5 months of the year. And so, she paid her bills for most of the last part of the season.
She absolutely did. Now, she's been on the shelf since December, so this will be her first race back. I did talk with Harry Weiner, her trainer at Parks, and he said, you know, it's possible she'll need a race, but he expects her to run a really strong race and be in contention. Now, she is jumping from the $7,500 claiming level to the $15,000, so off the shelf, jump in class, but we're still expecting her to run really well.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Brisnet PPs here, and they got her as the fifth overall choice on the prime power number, but she's only like half a point from the fourth, and it's not too big of a leap to the other top horses. So she's 8-1 on the morning line, ridden by Jose Flores, who's off to a good start at the Parks meet. And you mentioned trainer Harold Weiner. We're going to try to get Harold on the show, but tomorrow after the race, you know, we'll recap it and we'll follow along how Bet America Babe does as she seeks to break the maiden. Sometimes, though, Merv, breaking the maiden's the worst because you lose the condition.
That's true. Yeah, I think we've been pretty comfortable with the second and third place finishes, but we do want to get a win out of her. We want to see her in the winner's circle and get that that winner's photo.
Does she race in the Bet America silks like Chantal and Kayla wear in the ads?
She does race in the Bet America.
Okay,
silks.
Great. So we'll just look for her in the big red, white, and blue silks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, Merv, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to chat with us and let us know a little bit about Bet America Babe. Again, she's running today in the eighth race, the final race at Parks. She's drawn way out on the outside, but looking to break the maiden is Bet America Babe. Thanks, Merv.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, we'll be right back here on the barn after this short timeout.
Hello, this is Kayla Straw, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
All right, so thanks to Merv for joining us, and if you're already listening to the show after Bet America Babe's run, well, hopefully she ran well, but we'll recap it a little bit more tomorrow. So we're gonna have some fun here on the bar, which we always try to do. And last week we debuted a new segment. It was the horse racing newlywed game. Barry and Amber Spears did a fantastic job. They proved to us why they're such a great couple, because they know about each other's horse racing preferences. And we're going to tackle that again today with my good friend Jessica Paquette and her partner Keith Henshaw. It's the horse racing newlywed game. All right, and that music means it's time for the horse racing newlywed game. And joining us today from beautiful Massachusetts, Jessica Paquette and Keith Henshaw, the longtime racing couple. Jess, are you guys in the Boston area, or are you out on the Cape at the Chateau today?
We are not out on the Cape. We are just north of Boston.
Okay, great. Well, how long have you and Keith been together?
Almost 5 years, like four and a half, 5 years.
So you figure you guys should know everything about each other's racing favorites and experiences and stuff, right?
One would hope, but people can surprise you.
Okay, well, I got five questions for you that I'm about Keith, and we'll see how you do, and then we'll kick you out, bring him back, and do five questions for him, and then we'll see how you guys do answering them.
And then we'll see who's sleeping on the couch.
Exactly right. Well, Gibbs will be, but... Okay, well, question number one, Jessica. If Keith owned horses, who would he have trained them?
Oh, that's a good one. He would have... I'm definitely going to get this wrong. I'm just going to say Jay Bernardini. He's a local guy.
Okay. All right. Question number two. What was Keith's biggest score betting the races?
No, he really doesn't wager that much. He's more of a nerdy fan like we are.
Okay.
I would have to say, yeah, well, I might have to take a pass on this one.
Okay. Well, if he answers something along that lines, we'll give it to you. All right,
okay.
Question number three. Keith is a huge Wise Dan fan, correct?
Yes, he is.
What's his favorite Wise Dan race?
Oh, probably the second Breeders' Cup Mile.
Second BC Mile. Was that the one at Santa Anita?
I think so.
Where he beat that gray horse?
That gray horse that I liked.
Of course. Okay. Number four. Who is Keith's favorite track announcer?
Jason Beam?
No. Come on.
No, I think Jason Beam. No, I know he really likes Miramati as well.
Okay, we're going to go with Frank. If he says me, I'll give him partial credit.
Okay.
And finally, what is Keith's favorite track that he's visited?
Keeneland.
Keeneland, okay. Okay, Jess, so now we're going to, you're going to leave and bring Keith in, and then you'll step out for a minute. We'll ask him five questions. They'll be different questions, so don't be thinking of your answers.
These are tricky. All right, here's Keith.
Okay.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good, Keith. How are you, man?
Good.
Okay, so here's the game. We're Jess told us you guys have been together almost 5 years. You both love racing, so I asked her five questions about your racing fanship and career. Now I'm going to ask you five questions about hers, and then we'll see if you guys can both answer each other's questions right.
All right, sounds like a challenge.
Yeah, okay. First question for you. What was the first racetrack Jessica ever visited?
Now, she got into racing well before I knew her. And I'm tempted to say Suffolk because that's really where she got her career started in racing. But I think I'm going to have to go with Rockingham.
Okay, The Rock.
Yes.
All right. Question number two. Jessica announced a race one time at Suffolk. What horse won that race?
Oh, she's going to kill me for this. Oh.
Because I know she knows.
Yes, she does. And, I do not know. Little Country Flyer. That's a made-up horse, I think, but that's what we're going with.
All right. That's perfect. Okay, question number three. Who is Jessica's all-time favorite racehorse?
All right. This I can get, I think. Although I believe at times she will change her mind on it. Like so many of us, it probably goes back to the first favorite you had. And we're going to go with Blazing Sword.
Blazing Sword?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Question number four. Jessica worked for years as an analyst at Suffolk. Who is her favorite racing analyst?
Oh. She likes him. You like him. Some people may feel differently about him, but we're going to have to go with Andy Serling.
Okay. Big Andy house here. All right. And the final question, what track that she hasn't been to does Jessica want to visit most?
Ooh, She's been to a good amount of them. Are we going to limit this to the U.S. or North America?
Anywhere in the world, man.
Oh, all right. I will say Royal Ascot.
Okay.
I don't know if that's going to be her answer, but I think that's what she truly believes.
Okay. All right. Well, go ahead and bring Jess back in, and we'll see if you guys can guess each other's answers and see who knows who the best.
All right. Here she is.
All right.
Are we going on speaker now?
We're going on speaker now.
Okay, the moment of truth.
The moment of truth. We're going to see who's right. So Keith, I asked Jessica five questions. Now I'm going to ask you these same five questions, and we'll see. Now, you're not trying to necessarily – actually, yeah, you are. You're going to answer it what you think she said. So, Keith, the first question I asked Jessica, if Keith owned horses, who would he have trained them?
Charles Lopresti.
Nah, Jessica went with Jay Bernardini.
I went for the wise Dan angle.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so one wrong so far. Second question. Keith, I asked Jessica, what was your biggest score betting the races?
Oh.
See, this is how he doesn't wager that much.
Yeah,
he's had a lot of bad losses.
Well, Jess, you can't give, you know, answers there.
I have not gambled a ton. My biggest win was a pick three at Laurel, where I played Penny's Appeal all. It really probably wasn't the best gambling decision, but it paid off well.
Okay. Well, Jessica said a pass because she said you were going to go with the I don't really gamble. I'm going to give partial credit for that because you kind of answered it that way to start. Yeah. Well, especially when you in the background, you started going, hey, he doesn't gamble very much.
Unless he has a big gambling problem I don't know about. Maybe that's when I go to bed, he bets Low Sal at night.
I'm not going to say I've never done that with a partner.
We've read the book, Jason.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Keith, question number three. I asked Jessica, Keith is a huge Wise Dan fan. What's his favorite Wise Dan race?
My favorite would be his first Breeders' Cup Mile win.
Okay, Jessica said his second Breeders' Cup Mile win.
All right. Yeah. I like to be able to rub it in her face that he beat Animal Kingdom.
Well, she said she bet that gray horse that he beat the second time, too. So apparently you beat her both years.
Both years.
All right. Keith, question four. I asked Jessica, who is Keith's favorite track announcer?
Jason Beam?
Yes.
Well, no, hold on. She said that originally, and I said you can't say that. And so so I'm going to give it to you as right, but if you had to throw me out, because technically I'm not working right now in that capacity, who would you say other than me?
Okay, so current, I have, over the past couple months, really grown fond of Frank Miramati.
All right, perfect. So you technically got two right on that one.
All right.
And the final question, I asked Jessica, what is Keith's favorite track he's ever visited?
Ooh. Now, I have not been to nearly as many as Jessica. Does one have to have seen a race at this track or just have been to?
I think I just said, I the way I wrote it or read it was has visited.
Keeneland.
Yep, you got it. All right. So, Keith, you got 3 out of 5, so that's not too bad. Okay, so Jess has to get 3 out of 5 as well here. So, okay, Jess, so for you, I asked Keith question number one, what was the first racetrack Jessica ever visited?
Rockingham.
That's what Keith said. All right, one for one.
Excellent.
For Keith, yeah. All right, question number two. I asked Keith, I said, Jessica's announced one race at Suffolk. What horse won that race?
That was Worth the Worry.
He didn't know, so he guessed Little Country Flyer.
All right.
Which he also then claimed was totally made up. I actually really badly now want to go search Equibase to see if there's a Little Country Flyer out there somewhere.
Well, I will tell you, it was never a Suffolk horse. So that completely just came from Keith's brain.
Okay, so 1 out of 2.
Okay.
So, Jess, question number three. I asked Keith, who is Jessica's all-time favorite horse?
Well, there are two answers. I have to say What a Trippy or he'll buck me off tomorrow, but my real all-time favorite horse is Blazing Sword.
Keith said Blazing Sword, so we're going to give that to you.
All right.
Okay, fourth question. Jess worked for years as an analyst. Who is her favorite racing analyst?
Oh, Andy Sterling.
Man, all right. You guys are on fire now. So three out of four. So so Keith will actually win I guess you both kind of win if you get this one right. All right. Jessica, I asked Keith, what track that you have not visited do you most want to visit?
Oakland.
Okay. Well, he said Royal Ascot.
Oh, I thought we were saying domestic. Yes, Royal Ascot would actually be...
All right. Since we're not officially scoring and there's nothing at stake, we're going to go ahead and say Jessica got 3.5 right on that
one.
So, all right. Well, fantastic, you guys. I appreciate your time. And thank you so much for playing the horse racing newlywed game. And we'll be right back. We'll be right back after this timeout. It's the Bet America Radio Network.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz. And want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
All right, welcome back into the Bet America Radio Network, and we are pleased to be joined on the phone by a contributor to Optics EQ, which is a new service that's being launched, and we want to talk a little bit about trip handicapping, because that's her specialty. Emily Gullickson joining us on the phone. Emily, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jason. Thanks.
So, Emily, you have one of my favorite names on Twitter. You're at MayhemEmily1. Is MayhemEmily, is that like a roller derby nickname or something?
Yes, that was my roller derby name. Absolutely.
One of my good friends in Portland was into derby, and hers was Venus Envy, which I thought was fantastic.
Oh my God, I know her.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Well, she was in New Mexico.
She's from Austin, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she was in New Mexico for a while, and then was in Portland. And I just like there's some amazing roller derby nicknames.
Yeah. She was. I met her in Austin. She was on the reality show, same when I was on Roller Girls.
Oh, okay. But yeah. Isn't that an amazing name, though? Venus Envy.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. But the other one we had in Portland was we had the Guns and Rollers. And they used to come out to Portland Meadows, and I remember one day they were doing a Winter Circle presentation, so I got to say all their names. It was like Paradise Kitty, and they were all named after Guns N' Roses songs.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, Emily, you're part of a new venture called Optics EQ, Equine Analytics, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it because I've been following you guys on Twitter and, of course, talked to you at the NHC. Can you tell us a little bit about what Optics EQ is and how it kind of got started?
So I met and got involved in the project through John Doyle, who's an NHC champ, and he had been working on this project with some of his friends for a while. And really the development was, these are the factors that they look at when they're handicapping and how to somewhat automate it and make sure that those systems are effective. So when I met John through Frank Scatoni, who also works on Optics EQ, and we started doing trip notes, and that's when I got brought on to the project of doing trip notes and trip grades for Optics.
And so my initial understanding was like that it was a past performance, but is it necessarily a PP system? Or because I know there's a lot of different things that it focuses on.
Yeah, so we have our version of past performances called Optics Grid, which gives you all the horse's running lines. It's a little bit interactive. You can sort and filter different things that you find that you want to look at for that particular race. And then we have Optics Spot, which is a pace projector, and the trip notes, Optics notes.
So you mentioned you can kind of choose what you want. So is it kind of like, you know, DRF Formulator? I know you can kind of create your own system. Is that kind of how it works for optics as well?
Right, yeah. You can filter, you know, if you don't want to look at the horse's entire, you know, career history, you can filter out the last year or, you know, the other day, Stan and Anita took the races off the turf. We can look for just dirt and off the turf races, you know, just kind of cut those out. You know, you can sort on speed figures, you know, see who's fast enough to be competitive within this race. So there's different ways to look at it. You know, it just kind of depends on the handicapper, what their style is, what they're looking for. You know, I was looking for, I came up with that horse All About Yasmin yesterday, and I was just kind of looking at some different things as far as, like, running lines, like where the horse is positioned in the race, so I was able to filter where they are at the first call, second call. And that horse kind of, like, came up with just some different things I was looking at as far as, you know, a running style I want to see going five furlongs on the turf at Gulfstream.
Emily Gullickson joining us. She's with Optics EQ. Wait, now, is trip handicapping, is that something you've always focused on? Is it something more recent to your handicapping? How did you kind of get into it? Because, you know, a lot of people have, you know, you hear about speed handicappers, you hear about trip handicap, you know, there's a lot of different types.
Yeah, I haven't always done it to this extent that I have working with Optics, but it is something that I've noticed I just kind of picked up on early on. And I enjoyed doing, you know, looking at the way a horse runs in a race. So yeah, it is something, you know, a little bit different with Optics. We tried to make it a similar language, you know, using keywords that we can run analytics on, that anyone that's seeing a horse, if we use a keyword traffic, for example, and you see that anywhere, you know what that means, instead of just like, well, the horse is boxed in, or, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
We can just simply say traffic, you know, similar language. And along with that, we use projections. So we want to know, does the horse want to go shorter? Does he want to go on turf? You know, needs a drop in class? There's some different aspects to it that we use in Optics.
So what's your process for doing, you know, a day's worth of trip notes? Let's say you're going to, you know, do the races at Santa Anita. Do you just go through and watch the races once each and look for, like, the obvious things, or do you kind of go horse by horse? What is your procedure for it?
So right now I'm doing Gulfstream, but the process is still going to be the same. I'm watching the race. I'm watching the whole entire card. So one, you know, I want to start off, I want to see, you know, make notes if I see anything going on in the paddock, you know. Hopefully the horse doesn't flip, but let's say it does. You know, I'm able to write that down. If the horse is starting to wash out or get warm or get anxious or looks very good, you know, start with my notes process there. Kind of follow them onto the track. Again, watch their warm-up, their warming up, just monitoring their behavior, and then watching the whole entire race. And I would love to say I could get every single note just in one watch, but it's not often that simple. So I'll watch several times, as many times as I need, different angles, watch the head on, be able to pause. I like to initially watch the race just as it's live, because I don't know the results. So I'm kind of picking up everything, you know, where the horses are in the race, like if anybody starts to make a move, different things like that. So I'm writing notes as I'm watching it, and then I'll go back through and continue that out until I feel like I've fully captured that race.
So do you actually incorporate your notes from the paddock and the pre-race into the actual trip notes?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, it's going to, anything that we can write down that we think could play a factor, you know, in the race. You know, if I have a horse that looks extremely well, and I can start to see a pattern because it's a horse I've watched, you know, the entire meet, and I know when this horse, you know, looks well, he runs well, and then vice versa. So that's important. If I'm just watching, you know, watching a replay, you might not have that. You know, you might not have that, you know, 10 to 20 minutes before a race just looking at the horse.
Emily Gullickson joining us. You can find her on Twitter at MayhemEmily1, and you can also find Optics EQ on Twitter at Optics EQ. Now, one thing I want to ask you about trip handicapping is dirt and turf races are obviously, you know, they tend to be run a little bit differently. Do you, as a trip handicapper, kind of view them a little differently? I would think that turf races maybe are a little more subtle on trip stuff.
Yeah, you know, they, yeah, they are different. I feel like I've watched so many races. Sometimes the dirt race can be as complicated. But, mm-hmm. yeah, the pace comes into it a lot more on turf. You know, if you have a bigger field, things like that. There's a lot going on. So you can get a lot. You can get a lot more out of that. Tends to be on dirt, you know. That's different. Let's just put it that way. They are different, yeah.
And then, you know, as far as trip handicapping advice and notes and stuff, I would think, do you guys try to focus maybe a little more on the more non-obvious stuff? Because, I mean, if there's a horse that, you know, like, you know, Fleet Alex and the Preakness, you know, everybody knows, you know, that he got, you know, sawed off at the top of the stretch. Are you guys focusing on that, or are you focusing more on, you know, little intricate stuff?
We're focusing on everything. So when you see a horse that has, you know, that has significant trouble, you know, the horse has significant trouble, but you have to look at it and go, like, to what degree and effect is that going to make on the horse's final outcome going forward?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you going to do with that trouble? Is that horse, you know, going to win if he didn't have that trouble? Or that horse had trouble, but maybe he's still not good enough? You know, there's different ways to look at the trouble. We're looking for things that are obvious, like trouble, or, you know, the horse got through, or the horse is in traffic. You know, similar things, the way the jockey gives a ride, whether it's a good ride, whether it's a bad ride, and again, how that's going to affect going forward. So our notes are giving a description of what happened in the race, but also trying to tell people how to use that information going forward.
Well,
that's what's important,
yeah,
right? You
yeah,
have to
yeah.
try to figure out how to use that trip.
You mentioned the jockeys. Do you find that you observe jockeys a little bit differently now that you focus on trip handicapping so much, and you kind of maybe learn a little bit about some of their proclivities?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, different styles of jockeys. You know, whether they're having a good, you know, whether they're going through a streak. What kind of horse to ride? You know, there's a lot that goes on. Jockeys are important. They are important.
What if, I don't want to have you single out any riders, but have there been riders that you as a handicapper now, you know, kind of avoid because you've picked up things that they just do that you don't like?
You know, it changes. I try to not be so like locked in on an opinion because I know people can go through streets and things like that. But, you know, I think probably on Twitter, I came and said this a lot, but I was like pretty, you know, harsh on Edgar Prado. He had been pretty cold coming back from an injury. And so you have to take that into consideration, you know, when you're having a horse. And I watched a few rides that he looked timid, you know, so there's things like that I just want to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
As a better and things that I'm going to make aware of, like making a note, you know, that, yeah, the horse lacked room, but also, you know, the jockey was very hesitant to go through that room. It's not, you know, not just the horse. There was a lot more going on there.
Emily Gullickson joining us from Optics EQ. And Emily, one of the things I wanted to ask you about on the Optics software, you guys assign grades for trips. How does your grading scale and system kind of work?
The grade is based on the performance. So the performance is and grade is relative to that race at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of ways I kind of tend to look at it for myself on handicapping is sort of where that horse sits at that level. So almost like a class rating. And you'll start to see patterns emerge. Like we've been doing notes and grades on these major circuits for a year. So we have a big sample. We can see a horse's career pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see where they run a B. And so a B is a race that the horse is competitive and can win at the level. It's kind of a standard.
Okay.
And that's sort of where we come up with the grade, is those are the horses that are most competitive at that level. To earn, you know, an A minus or a B plus, the horse has to be exceptional at that level.
Okay.
You know, a horse like XYJ, who, you know, he's going to run an A. I mean, that's just a spectacular performance.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to win the race most of the time, where a horse, you know, on that level running a B, they probably just did what they needed to do to win.
Okay. And so if a horse gets, you know, a lower grade, is it because maybe they didn't belong in that race, or is it because they had a bad trip, or how do the lower grades work?
The lower grade, yeah, it's usually that they're not able to be competitive at that level.
Okay.
So if you have a horse that's, you know, a lower level claimer and the horse has, you know, 20 plus races on his career and his last five races, he earns a C, which is our lowest grade. We don't go in BF or anything like that. C being the lowest grade, and there's no keywords to describe that C. That horse is just a C. That horse is just not competitive.
Okay, at that
you
level.
Know, under you're right, not competitive at that level and under any circumstance. Now, if it's a C with, you know, slog, which is like slow from the gate, wide, you know, the horse had a wide trip, and then he was a, you know, no push, the jockey didn't ask, that's a little bit different C. You know, that's something that we can see, well, the horse might be a little bit better. We try to use a description like, you know, improve next time, or, you know, something that's going to say that the horse is capable of running a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, you know, so we, our grade system is a C, C plus, B minus, B, C plus, A minus, A.
Emily, one thing I'm always curious about is how people get into racing and handicapping. How were you first exposed to horse racing?
Well, I was first exposed to horses as a kid. I rode horses, and I loved being at the barn. I would just hang out at the barn all day long. I rode hunter jumper mostly, but I worked at the barn to kind of like help pay for my lessons. So I was always mm-hmm. there grooming and cleaning tasks, to kind of just be at the bar the whole time. And I love being around horses, like any aspect I could. And then, you know, I got away from it, you know, really financial time and just different aspects in life. And, you know, a few years ago now, but my mom came out to visit, and she's like, oh, let's go to Turf Paradise. Like, okay. And I hadn't been to the track. I think the last time I went to the races was Santa Rosa Fairgrounds mm-hmm. when I was maybe 12. And, you know, she grabbed, like, racing form, program, and I had no idea what any of that stuff was. And I just was like, what is this racing form? And I really enjoyed, like, reading it and, like, studying the race. So I got into handicapping and then started playing tournaments from there and just kind of let it go from that, but it was pretty quick. As soon as I found the racing form and started getting into handicapping, I was hooked instantly.
And you live in Arizona. Isn't it kind of a struggle to play online and do tournaments and stuff there? Don't they have rules against some of that?
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, they just allowed us to open ADW accounts and bet by phone, but, you know, major tournament sites, Derby Wars, horse tourneys, anything that's a cash game, you're not allowed to play from Arizona. So it's pretty tough. We don't have an NHC qualifier in-state live. So to go to those tournaments, you have to travel. Not the easiest to be a tournament player living in Arizona.
And you've qualified for the NHC before, right?
I have. I've qualified a couple times, and I've qualified again this year with a friend, Alan. So I'll be playing in 2017.
It's probably a relief to get the qualify out of the way early in the year, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It really is. I mean, last year I was, you know, I didn't do as much because I've been working so hard on optics, and then kind of like the last month I was like, oh man, I really got to qualify for the NHC, which was like tough because I had given myself like three opportunities,
mm-hmm.
Neither of which I did well in. So, yeah, it's nice. It's nice. And then the year before, I qualified on Derby Wars, and that was in June. So it's very nice when you can get it out of the way and then just, you know, spend the rest of the year just playing and getting practice.
What's been your biggest tournament success so far?
Probably the Derby Wars tournament going into the NHC. That one was, like, that was really my most favorite tournament I won. I qualified in 1, 2, 3 steps. So I played a game on Derby Day that year, like early on in the card, to get into like a second level one, and I had like almost won that game, and I really felt like I should have. So I finished fourth, which got me into the NHC qualifying game, and it was like a month later. So like that whole month, I'm like, I need redemption because I really felt like I should have won that game. And so it was really nice to win that Derby Wars game. I worked hard for it, and I was quite happy with it.
Emily Gullickson joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network for just a second. A little behind the scenes info about Emily is you work as a fitness trainer and do CrossFit stuff, and you've even helped me working on some of my fitness and stuff. And I'm down a few lbs. I got to thank you for that. I've been incorporating some of the dietary stuff you advised me on and exercise stuff. And I got to admit, the biggest benefit so far is just more energy.
Yeah, you'll notice that right away.
Again, we're being joined by Emily Gullickson from Optics EQ. You can find Optics at OptixEQ.com and find Emily on Twitter at Mayhemily1, MayhemilyOne. And Emily, one thing I was going to ask, I know you guys have kind of just recently launched, and you guys are running some specials and stuff so people can get introduced to the software, right?
Yeah, so we took our monthly rate and reduced it 50% discount this month for all of our products, and that's Grit, Optics Grid, Optics Quad, and Optics Notes. Mm-hmm. And we ran this with our beta users. We kind of, the more that they used it, the more they got familiar with it, and the more that they liked it. So instead of doing like a one-day special, we really want players to get in and explore the product because it really is excellent. And the more that you use it, the more you become familiar with it. You get to see patterns with the notes, get more familiar with the grid, look at the plot. We have notes for several different tracks. So most players are simulcast players, so they have Oaklawn, Santa Anita, Aqueduct, and Gulfstream notes right now. It's a very good value for this product, so definitely I hope people take advantage of this and get to explore and spend time with Optics EQ.
Well, I know our mutual friend Charlie Davis. He was one of your guys' beta testers, right?
Yeah, Charlie's been great. He used our product early on, gave a lot of good feedback. He used it at the NHC, helped him out with some plays, positive and negative. You know, of course, as he thought about playing and didn't look so good on the product, and it was a good pass, and something that helped him out. So yeah, he's been wonderful for us. He loves the product, which is great, especially for us developing it, to have somebody on the outside using it and give great feedback. And somebody like Charlie, who is a professional horse player, who uses it for a living, part of their toolkit, it's really special for us.
All right. Well, Emily, I really appreciate your time. And again, folks can check it out at Optics with an X, EQ.com. So we'll catch up with you soon.
Okay, Jason, thanks so much.
All right, Emily Gullickson joining us here. We'll be right back after the short timeout on the Bet America Radio Network.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, so a busy show. My thanks to Emily Gullickson from Optics EQ for joining us, as well as Jessica Paquette and Keith Henshaw and Merv Huber Calvo. So we'll be back with you tomorrow for a Wednesday Barn, and we hope everybody has a great rest of your Tuesday, and we look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow. Don't forget, you can always email the show, barn@betamerica.com, or find us on Twitter, @BetAmerica. So from all of us at Team Bet America, I'm Jason Beam, and I'm bidding you a very pleasant Tuesday, and we'll see you tomorrow.